You're listening to Around Comics, episode 242, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Netflix. Scar cracks open, the walls falling through the floor. Just as well to keep it, I guess I'm game.
Living right is easy. What goes wrong, you're causing it.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics normally recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, but we are at our second home of Challengers Comics and Conversation, located at 1845 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, drop on by, say hi to Patrick and Dal. You heard Patrick last week, but this week we have reshuffled the roundtable. I'm Christopher Niesman. Let me get you introduced to everybody else. Sitting in for Patrick Brower, who is sitting in for Sal, who is still coming off of his little Vegas vacation, is Mr. Mike Norton.
Oh, hey. I'm sitting in for them?
You're sitting in for Patrick, who is sitting in for Sal.
Wow,
but you're not
a lot of shoes to fill.
You are in no way our third choice, Mike Norton.
Man, should have called us the B team.
That's all right.
Coming back from last week is Mr. Chris Burnham.
Part of the B team.
I'm sitting in for Tom Caters.
You are sitting in for Tom Caters, who was going to be...
The Flash is good.
He was going to be at this recording, but was coming out of the Cubs game with his lovely fiance, and I think got caught in public transportation hell as all the Cub fans were celebrating from the...
were beat down by some white hats.
Something like that. I think that's what his text said. Chris getting beat down by white hats, can't make the recording. So Chris Burnham is ably filling in for Mr. Caters, and a man that needs no fill-in introduction.
Yeah, as opposed to sitting in for someone, I'm sitting on someone. And you might be able to hear them gasping for breath underneath me.
And that is the voice that you know from Word Balloon. He is Mr. John Suntress.
Hi. How are you? Hi.
Gotta have the voices, digits.
You know, if you look in the comic book podcast book, that first picture, I think that is me, like, going to Pat Leica and going, hi,
hi.
Because it really, like, everyone, like, my family was like, oh, you're in a book? Let's see it. And they're like, Jesus Christ, nice picture.
What happened there, John?
I know. I'm like, yeah, you know, sorry.
Actually, you know, we all love your Harry Carey and some of the other
Jesus,
ones. But
terrible.
I have developed a deep affinity for your Jeremy Hahn impersonation.
I don't know what you mean. I am just here.
I try to do Norton every now and then, but, you know.
Does that sound like me?
No, it just kind of goes into like Colonel Sanders.
I fry my chicken a special way. 18 recipes, 18 secret herbs and spices that I've been screwing over people all over the country. And soon Russia. Islamic fried chicken.
Islamic fried chicken.
True. Absolutely true. And so they call it that, but it is Kentucky Fried Chicken. Going back to the Iran Revolution days of the 70s.
It's IFC?
Apparently.
Very funny.
I'm just telling you.
Very funny. Well, hey, before we get rolling here, I want to remind everyone this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com. We're waiting for the trade. It's never been easier. InStockTrades offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe art covers, essential showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free. We talk about them all the time. They is a great service. If you are a wait for the trader, it's a great place to consolidate a bunch of those trades that you want to get to that $50 point and put your order in, and they will ship it off to you. It is good stuff, and they are so kind as to increase their discount on our book club selection, which is the Justice League International Volume 1. It's now available for a fantastic 47% off the cover price.
Wow. That's the Kevin Maguire, Keith Giffen stuff.
Kevin Maguire,
J.M. DeMatteis.
Yep. And you can get it for $9.54. All that in InStockTrades.com. And actually, Mike, whenever we do that book club episode, I know that you are a big fan of the Bwahaha era JLI.
I'm of two minds of it. I mean, mm-hmm. I was really into it when it came out, and I'm a huge Booster and Beetle fan.
Sure.
But at the same time, if you're a Blue Beetle fan, that was the beginning of the let's make your awesome character into a cartoonish oaf era.
So you have some heavy, deep feelings about this book.
I don't like what they actually did to the character, but at the same time, it was very entertaining. So
and good to see every month. Yeah. But maybe whenever we do that book club episode, you can sit in with us and talk about how they gutted your favorite character.
You have sullied the reputation of Ted Kord, sir.
They made him important. They made him important. They just turned him into a cartoon.
It was a funny ha-ha book. Yeah. So, I usually forget. I'm trying to make a point of mentioning our featured music artist. And Mike, you probably, I would imagine, a fan of this band. It's got some southern roots. It's really more out of the St. Louis area. It is. We had some Wilco on about a month and a half ago, and this is the other guy that was a big part of Uncle Tupelo, which Wilco spun out of. This week's featured artist is Sunvolt.
Yep.
Oh, very nice.
So, big fan of Jay Farr and Sunvolt, and he's a big St. Louisan. So
you're an XRT fan, aren't you? Because they play the shit out of all these bands.
Absolutely. Excellent. Absolutely. I actually bumped into Jay Farr in an old used bookstore in University City, like 10 years ago, and a very nice guy.
Cool. So,
yep.
Good stuff. You mentioned the in-stock trades. I'm going to be going to that signing.
You know, I heard you say that. So, wow. Are you going to have a fun banner of people joining you?
You can go if you want.
I'm thinking about
I'll probably be leaving pretty early in the morning.
I hate to say this, Mike,
because it is Fort Wayne, Indiana. Yeah. It's not that close.
You actually already went to that signing. How was it?
Oh, you see, this is with the time difference and everything.
It was on Saturday.
So I'm hoping that I did join you and we
had fun. It was amazing. They gave me $1 million. And I am now the mayor of Fort Wayne.
Fort Wayne, that's great. I had family that owned the movie theater there and a couple of the car dealerships and stuff.
Fort Wayne.
For a long time. They had a lot of money in Fort Wayne.
I unfortunately am not going to be able to, or wasn't able to make it.
You a sucker.
but I may slip you a couple fins and a wish list whenever
what
you're
does
there.
What mean, a couple of fins?
Couple of fins? Literally,
he's
it's gonna,
he's
going
to make love
fish.
To you.
Exactly. He's coming in. I think he's coming under you.
But yeah, that's the 10th anniversary sale there at Discount Comic Book Service.
I call my penis Finn too.
I got a couple fins for you too. Oh, hold on. Stand back.
You guys are terrible. Terrible.
All right.
Okay. Can't help it. Last week we were talking about some of the books that we've been getting into.
Let's do this.
And really got to talk with Jeff Parker, which kind of cut some of that off.
Punk.
So he said all of your friends are dicks, by the way.
Did he?
Yes, he did.
What did he mean by that?
He was joking.
He said that all of my friends are dicks?
Well, they're all dicks. Who cares?
Oh, that's weird.
It was funny.
Parker's
all right. Burnham is sitting in for Tom, which means that you get to.
I get to go first.
You get to kick us off here.
Oh, we're talking about comics already?
Oh, wait. Let me.
I better think of something.
Let me see. I already talked about the ones I really, really like.
Do you want a moment?
Let me talk about the ones I hated.
Okay.
No. This is totally random, and I know you guys don't like to talk about manga, but the first, just about the first comic I've ever been able to read online was a scanslation of Getter Robo, the first transforming robot ever. Go Nagai and Ken Ishikawa's Getter Robo.
What is a scanslation?
It's
not published here.
Right. Ah, so it's, okay. It was, you know.
Okay, I didn't honestly.
Yes, it was. So it was, you know, someone scanned in a Japanese manga and then, you know,
someone
translated.
Slipped a CD into his bag without him knowing.
All right, I'm sorry.
And he went home and said,
to,
what is this? And
yes.
Said,
oh, I'm trying to think of an American filmmaker equivalent of Go Nagai. I'm trying to he's kind of it's
I don't know.
So nuts. He's just.
It's crazy.
I've seen a couple of Go Nagai animes.
Yeah, it's like if Quentin Tarantino was 13 years old.
Yeah, it's just everything is somebody yelling at I'm going to kill you with my dick.
Jesus.
Yeah, it makes these 180 degree turns from ultra violence to juvenile sexuality.
Yeah, it's so bizarre.
Yeah, it's cool. Great. But yeah, Getter Robo, you can go to. It's either Manga Helper or Manga Helpers, and you can read the first 400 pages of Getter Robo in for free in English. And the most compelling shit I've like.
This
I've,
is legal. I've,
even more so than Bean World.
Most compelling shit on the internet I've read, and it's the only thing I've ever been able to read more than 5 pages in a row of on my computer screen.
Interesting.
Really good, really juvenile, and like just the most outrageous violence. And it's
he's ridiculous.
And it's like stuff. It's like the heroes are the violent people, and it's like there's no commentary on the fact that, hey, this is probably wrong. They just let you make up your mind about whether or not that's cool for him to poke out that dude's eyes.
Yeah.
Really weird.
It's almost like if you actually made a realistic version of Prime. You know what I mean? Like that cartoon. Like, what would that be like if a teenager today made like this? What would he be like? He would be like an asshole.
The Malibu Prime.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
He's just like, yeah, look at me. And then he'd just rip you in half.
All right.
I'm strangely compelled.
I am too. Manga helper or Mega helpers?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Okay. I got one. And it's not a traditional comic book. It is a book. About comics, but what I like about it is that it really is it actually has the comics in it. I'll just tell you what it is. It's the best of Simon and Kirby, and this came out from
who are they?
Heard of them?
There's this guy named Joe Simon who
still around,
yeah,
90 whatever,
and Jack Kirby you may have heard of.
He's dead.
Titan Books put out this absolutely beautiful hardcover edition called the Best of Simon and Kirby, and it. What I love about stuff like this is that whenever you talk about historical comics and they'll put out these really nice hardcovers, it's usually 80-90% text pieces talking about the era and what was going on, and then you maybe, you know, get 10-20% of like actual comics in it. This is the inverse of that. There are some nice historical text pieces in here, but this is like 90% actual comics.
That's
that
cool.
That Simon and Kirby did, and it is awesome golden age stuff. This is all before Kirby was working for Marvel.
Right.
It is the early Captain America stuff. I mean, it's all over the place.
How many different publishers are represented there? Because really, Simon and Kirby packaged for several companies before, you know, after Timely and before. Jack wound up at DC even for a few years before Marvel and stuff. So yeah, I'm wondering how many different companies
are
represented.
It's got to be a lot because, I mean, here's just a sampling of some of the, you know, complete stories that are in here.
Okay.
Captain America and the Riddle of the Red Skull. They've got the Vision, like the original Vision.
Yeah, that's another Timely character.
Marvel Mystery. Sandman, the original Sandman. Okay, that's from Adventure Comics.
Yep, All-American. Yep.
These are all DC. They break this down into different genres. This is from the Heroes section, and then Way Out Science Fiction. They've got Solar Patrol and Blue Bolt and Cover. The Thing on Sputnik 4.
Okay,
it's the Warren Adventure is Satan Wears a Swastika.
Oh, it's a Jim Warren. It's a Warren.
It's from Boy Commandos number 1.
Okay,
Duke of Broadway. Then they go into there's more of those, and they've got romance comics.
Who, by the way, the two of them truly pioneered the genre
of romance comics.
Yeah.
And those were big sellers, man.
Yes,
huge sellers.
Yes,
yeah.
I mean that's their first big post-war innovation.
Dark Avengers has nothing on the romance comics that were coming out.
You are 100% right.
The Savage in Me from Young Romance Comics. They've got the crime drama stuff on Headline Comics and Real Clue Crime Stories.
Was The Savage in Me a romance comic?
Yeah, The Savage in Me.
Was it really?
Yeah, it's like a Harlequin romance,
man,
I guess.
That would be awesome.
They've got Westerns from The Kid Cowboys of
Boys Ranch.
There
you go. Very cool.
They've got horror comics, stuff from Black Magic and The Strange World of Your Dreams, and then Sick Humor, which is probably my favorite chapter in there. 20,000 Lugs Under the Sea. they've got this awesome Lenny Bruce section in here of Kirby drawing Lenny Bruce. It was
that's cool. You know,
freaking out. Here, I'll.
Well, that's the thing. I've heard you talk about this book on 11 O'Clock Comics, mm-hmm. and it sounded like Vince and David Jason, and David yeah. and Jason were kind of surprised at the various genres to a degree.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, this is what artists did back then. They drew everything.
Oh, Kirby had a prolific career long before he was ever drawn Fantastic Four.
Well, yeah. And I know Vince, and Vince is an old, you know, Golden Age fan, mm-hmm. and I know he was aware of a lot of this stuff as well. But yeah, I mean, it's yeah, this is what artists did. It wasn't just superheroes. They certainly worked on every genre, and especially these guys were bosses. And that's the other mm-hmm. thing that you got to remember is that, and especially Joe Simon, he really was kind of the office manager and was the de facto editor-in-chief of Timely.
Yeah, and that's how that kind of ran at that time. You look at the EC offices with Bill Gaines. Right. That's how it was. He was owner and operator, and he wrote stories.
And right? Joe was hired by Martin Goodman to run Timely, and Stan worked for Joe Simon, mm-hmm. and Jack was the de facto art director, I suppose. But the other thing, too, is, and I agreed with Vince, and I tease Vince, and I will disagree with him on various things. But one thing he said I heard on 11 o'clock that I will agree with, that he really put a polish on Kirby's work when the two of them worked together and when he would ink over Kirby. And I think the combination of Simon and Kirby is a very unique and interesting style in itself, as much as Jack's work by himself, you know, or art, I should say, inked by the various Marvel bullpen mm-hmm. guys or the people that inked him at DC. I think it really is a very special look and definitely worth exploring, and this is a wonderful collection. And also, Alter Ego, specifically about the humor, mm-hmm. they just did a thing on all the other humor publications that kind of came out to compete with Mad, both as a comic mm-hmm. and as a full-fledged magazine.
Yeah, on the newsstands.
And again, yeah. just like, you know, John Severin spent years working on Crazy for Marvel, you know, and we know John Severin from his wonderful, you know, war stories, westerns, yeah. and all that beautiful stuff that he did in the 50s, and was really one of the great satiric artists as well. And it doesn't surprise me that Simon and Kirby have their body of work as well. And it's also featured not only in this mm-hmm. Titan book, but in this recent issue of, if it wasn't Alter Ego, it was one of the Tomorrow's magazines that really spent a long time looking at the people that also put out books like Mad.
Well, you know, once again, what I really liked about this is that, you know, you pick up these historical comic collections, and it's basically a lot of, you know, this is what was going on at the time, and they'll show you a snippet here or there. But these are complete stories.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, it's really, really well packaged. I enjoyed it a lot. You're talking about Kirby and just how prolific an artist he was. It was, I forget, someone on Twitter, one of the artists, it's like, yeah, Nick Klein or somebody had tweeted Kirby's production from a year kind of at his most
output.
His prolific output
was more than what I've done so far in my career.
He did 1,100 pages one year.
I'm not surprised.
And I want to say he was doing God, I want to say like FF, X-Men, Thor, all ongoings. He was doing fill-ins, and he did like, I want to say something like 600 covers that year.
And also think of, I know he would provide breakdowns for guys like John Buscema and, you know, guys that were coming back to comics and had to kind of learn the Marvel style, and specifically the Kirby action style. And Romita was like that, too. I know that, like, Romita's first Daredevil was like, he turned it in, and Lee looked at it and said, you know, it's too boring. You're not getting to the action fast enough. Yep. And he handed it over to Kirby, and Kirby gave Romita breakdowns of, okay, collapse the scene this way, get to the action, this is the way I would do it. And Buscema has come out and said, when he was still alive, he's like, everything I learned about superhero comics, it was following Jack's breakdowns, and literally they handed me a stack of Jack's books. So that doesn't surprise me. And the other thing, too, is I was going back and listening to a couple of old Word Balloon interviews I did my first year with Gene Colan and Neil Adams. All these guys were geared to draw so fast.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's the only way that they would really, you know, earn a living. So, you know, Gene Colan complaining about how his glaucoma has really kind of left him drawing with one eye. And he's like, well, so I can only do a page a day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, in your prime, where we, you know, exactly. And, you know, we got Burnham and Norton here just kind of looking down and shaking their heads. But, yeah, I mean, that's, these guys were just animals. And also, they say, well, too, and I know this is the case for both of you guys, because I've seen Norton tweet about it, and I know I've heard you complain about it and stuff. You got to just sit and do the work, and that's what they were doing. Yeah. They were just sitting in for 10-hour days just doing the work.
You know, Chris's work on the Marvel Mystery Comics,
mm-hmm.
beautiful stuff. Incredibly detailed.
Yep.
And I'm so happy that the industry.
I'd say a little bit ridiculous, actually.
Almost to a ridiculous extent. I mean, like, the first page where you can, like, actually see the prizes in the booths that are, like, right. You know, several hundred yards away and the table games. But, you know, I love that the industry has gotten to a point that artists are able to spend that kind of time and put that kind of detail in. You know, I'm sure that page, that opening page, probably took you two and a half days.
Probably day and a half, 2 days, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's Kirby was doing a book in 2.5 days.
You're a punk, is what he said.
I'm aware.
No, I mean, I think that's the thing that a lot of newer comic book fans or comic book fans that maybe it just hasn't come to a realization for them. They'll look at old Kirby stuff or look at old Golden Age comics and they see it as being simplistic.
Yeah,
it's very dynamic, but it's like, you know, these guys were knocking out three, sometimes four pages a day.
It's something you have to, like, develop an eye for, I guess. Like,
it is.
It's more sophisticated.
They're right in a way that it is simple sometimes. And if you actually believe that, then you're dummy. You're a dummy. But, I mean...
here's the thing is that I've heard some people say that I don't think that Kirby's a very good artist.
And oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, when I was 8 years old, I was right with him.
I think I said this last time I was on your show, even with Tim. When you're younger and you look at, I saw Steve Ditko and I was like, who is this?
Suddenly.
Yeah. I was like, I want my, you know, my John Ross, Romita. My Ross Andrew, yeah. John Romita. Yeah. What's going on here? This is horrible because I think Marvel Tales was being put out at the same time as Ron Friend's Spider-Man.
Yeah,
that was
that's
out.
That's when I was reading.
And
it,
I was like, this isn't cool. And now he's one of my favorite artists ever, and it's because, and as a kid, I hadn't done that much drawing. I mean, I drew, but now I know what it takes to do this sort of thing. And you realize that these guys who were essentially working in the dark, they had nobody to base this off of, really. Yeah. And they came up with this. And I'm just like, you know what? I have to beat myself up to get to the point where I am now. And I had all of this work to climb on. And these guys didn't. And they were able to do this. There's no way I would have done that good.
I and forgive me not being an artist, but I would say, because I've heard this based on the interviews that I've done and things I've read, they were the people they looked to were the daily comic strip people. Because and honestly, I was surprised to learn the influences of some of these people, and Kirby especially. A lot of his early work really was kind of knockoffs of Roy Crane, who did Wash Tubs, and I forget the other lead in that one action.
Captain Easy, right?
Captain Easy, thank you. Yes, exactly. And certainly Kniff was...
Yeah, these guys were all Kniff.
And Alex Raymond and Prince Valiant, Hal Foster. I mean, these were the leaders and everything, and they were the guys that all the comic book people were aspiring to. Yeah. But I do see what you're saying, and I mean that's, you know, it is and certainly not the mountain of things to look at as opposed to what we have today.
If you were to say that today, you're showing ignorance.
And that's what it is, and not in a mean way, but it's all you have to do is pick up a Kirby collector, and they'll show raw pencils of stuff that he did, and it's been talked about some of the inking, and people I think rail on Coletta, maybe deservedly so sometimes, but Kirby's pencils really got butchered sometimes his pencils were so beautiful, especially whenever he had time to actually sit down and work them. I saw some Thor, like double page spreads of Thor, that I'm just like,
leaves some interpretation, because I mean, if we're talking about a layman that has seen all this art now, and they say, and they'll say something stupid like Jack Kirby's no good, this sucks.
Yeah.
If you saw pencils from back then, I don't know if Joe Blow off the street would be any more inclined to change his mind after that.
Yeah, okay.
In fact, they would be like, holy crap, how'd they even make what they made out of this, Because, I mean, some of those pencils back in the day when it was more of an assembly line thing and people were more collaborative and stuff was actually added. I mean, this is only through your appreciation of the stuff that you can go back and recognize.
And go, wow.
Yeah, because some of that stuff is... I mean, I'm really surprised when I do go back and look at some Jack Kirby pencils and see how tight they are in some places.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen like splash pages that are just as tight as they pencil now.
And then others.
But then others where I'm just like, whoa, how the... Was the guy like psychically linked to him? Because I can't imagine he was able to communicate anything through this page.
A good chunk of what's in this book, too, is that pre-Wortham period of Simon and Kirby's. And the thing to remember, especially with the romance comics, was that was for an adult audience.
Yeah.
And they were shorter stories. But, you know, you got to remember, again, because sometimes, and it's fair to say that in that post-Wortham period, comic books really were aimed towards the 8-year-old to 12-year-old audience. And it stayed like that for a very long time, really through the early 80s, I want to say, with some exceptions here and there, and certainly, but you know, the main, and certainly different than the way it was today. But, you know, during the war years and in that initial post-war period, up until Wortham really kind of condemning comics and the Senate agreeing and America kind of agreeing and really it becoming an outlaw art form again, there was, you know, there were adults that really weren't embarrassed by the fact that they were reading comic books, and there's some very sophisticated stories in there from this period and represented in this book, so that's kind of neat.
Cool. But I really enjoyed that, so check it out. It's from Titan Books. It's best of Simon and Kirby.
Oh, geez.
Do you have some yet, or you want to admit it?
I know you've been busy. I don't know if you've had time to read much.
I've been
much.
Reading a lot, but good. Most of it, I mean, I feel like everything I read is like 4 or 5 months behind everybody else.
That's
know?
Cool.
And then a lot of it's, you know, it's either trades or old comics that I'll buy comics and then not read them. I think I've got all the War of Kings and still haven't read them. By the way, it's War of Kings, not War of the Kings. Every podcast I listen to says War of the Kings.
I think we said it right last week. I'm not sure.
War of Kings?
Yeah. There's no "the" in it.
Okay.
It sounds like something your mom would say. Do your moms do
you
that,
have the
too?
War of the Kings book yet? War of the Kings?
She either adds "the" or makes stuff plural.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, so I'll do that, but it's to make a joke.
Right.
Nah,
but like,
you kids
watch
with
the Seinfeld, Christopher?
Yeah, the Seinfeld.
It's like the Fellowships of the Rings.
Oh.
What have I read? Recently, I just read the first two... Captain Britain and MI-13 trades.
Excellent.
Because I wanted to, you guys talk about it a lot.
Yeah, you're not going to fall behind on that one, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I kind of like being able to catch up, unfortunately.
No, they're going to be three great trades when all is said and done. Yep.
Is there two more issues coming out? Is that right?
That sounds right, but I'm not certain.
Yeah, yeah. Two more?
I just read those. Those are good. They this is weird, and I don't know maybe if you guys agree with me or not. It read like I was watching a British TV show.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Sure.
That's because the guy writing it, that's what Paul he Cornell. Does.
Okay. So that would make sense. I didn't know that's
well,
where
Paul Cornell writes Doctor Who.
Oh, that totally makes sense because it felt like a Doctor Who episode.
Yeah.
That whole hell comes to whatever the thing
was. Yeah.
Yes.
That felt like a Doctor Who episode.
Yeah, or Torchwood, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Holy crap.
Yeah, he's a Doctor Who.
Everybody's at home listening going, what a dumbass. I'm like, yeah, well, I didn't know that.
No,
that totally makes sense.
No, Cornell's a guy that I hope that Marvel definitely keeps him working.
It's good.
X-Men is starting next week, and he's writing that, and he's doing the Young Avengers Dark Reign miniseries. So no, I think they know what they got.
Pick up the Wisdom trade.
Okay, I got the first issue of that, and I liked it.
That's, Jeremy Hahn actually recommended that to me a couple of years ago, and I remember reading it, and that's what made me so excited about Cornell doing
and that. That's basically a lead-in to Captain Britain.
He's going to kick my ass.
Right. Because there's a lot of the
Well, you've got John the Scroll as a character in there, which is, I miss John the Scroll.
God, you know, really, the Scroll Beatles was such a fucking brilliant idea. I love that. So...
Yeah, that was that. I really liked that.
Leonard Kirk kicking ass on those books.
Yeah, it's a little different for him. It looks a little different. I like the artwork on it.
Yeah, well, we had talked with Jeff Parker last week.
And I talked to
Agents of Atlas.
Jay Leistein, his inker on a lot of stuff, and he was telling me that that Leonard changed his style a little bit so that he could keep the monthly pace.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And it doesn't look like he's skimping on anything, so I'm wondering what he changed exactly. It looks really good.
Who he sold his soul to?
Yeah, maybe that's what he meant.
By the way, Captain Midland's like my favorite character in MI-13. I just love that character. He just, you know.
It's a nice group of characters. I thought it was brilliant whenever they brought Blade into it.
Yeah, Blade is great in that book.
I thought it was a little weird, but then it fit it's in weird. Perfectly.
It does fit in.
Yeah.
Well, and you forget, and he was thrilled because he wanted to keep it an all British book, and he's like, "Oh, I forgot that he's British. Use Blade. Yep. That's because you know what's coming. By I don't want to tease for you if you haven't been reading the monthlies. I don't want to spoil for you.
Well,
what's beyond the first two trades?
Well, they tell you about the Dracula thing.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. And that's the thing that's been so fun about this most recent arc is just kind of in that same – we talked about it last week about Norman Osborn as the mastermind. And you forget, well, of course Dracula could be this kind of
– heck yeah.
You know, world – you know, mastermind behind this huge kind of plot. And it's a take on Dracula that I am not used to but is absolutely – makes sense for the character. And it is wonderful to watch. It is a real pleasure to read that book.
Yeah. It's very fun.
Well, it also added to the whole seems like a episode of Doctor Who thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because you read that last page and you're like, huh, Dracula's got a castle on the moon.
Oh, dude.
If I was 16 years old, I'd rip that comic book in half. I'd be like, this is the dumbest shit I've ever heard of.
Oh, man.
Oh, wait until you get to the vampire missiles.
Adult Mike looks at it and goes, that's pretty clever.
Oh, man. And the conversation that he has with Doom on the moon is just awesome. I love that. Can I do a quick thing?
Yeah, go for it.
I just want to point it out because I just had him on Word Balloon and had the pleasure talking to him, and he's back writing comic books after being away for like 15 years. Jerry Conway.
Yeah, he was doing – he was slumming around doing stuff like L.A. Law.
Law and Order.
Law and Order,
But also Diagnosis Murder the Father Dowling Mysteries. I mean, yeah, the guy's been working heavy in TV for almost 20 years. And,
I can't believe I said L.A. Law.
And that was a good show, too. Yeah. That was good. But
he hasn't been gone that long.
he in my interview, I asked him why back to comics, and he said because after 15 years, he kind of feels recharged to get back into it and is kind of tired of the politics that is involved with being on a TV series and getting your scripts and also the changes that happen between writing a story and when it finally appears on the screen. So he's 2 issues into The Last Days of Animal Man, and I am really thrilled when one of my old heroes comes back to write a new book, and it's nice to see that his voice still matters and that he's capable. Because some guys who do come back, it's just not there anymore. The magic's gone. Not the case in this book. And I think if you're a fan of the Vertigo Animal Man, there are tropes there. Chris Bautista, the artist, is doing a great job of simulating the Brian Boland look of the Vertigo run, so I think it fits very nicely with other trades of Animal Man stories. But if you've enjoyed what they've done with Buddy Baker in the DC Universe coming out of 52, and some of the missteps like Countdown to Adventure, which really wasn't that interesting, I think this is a great story. It's 25 years down the line, a middle-aged Animal Man discovering that maybe his powers are fading. And you know, the consequences of that. And I think it's great. And Conway admits that, you know, certainly you can't help but wonder if a guy in his late 50s writes a story like this, if, you know, he's kind of treading on familiar territory. And I think it's true. And he even said, he goes, as much as when he was writing Spider-Man in the 70s and early 80s, he put himself in the character. And just kind of a what if kind of situation, and so I kind of see that as well in this Animal Man story. I think it's wonderful, and a great example. The most recent issue, it guest stars Green Lantern, and I was like, oh, I wonder which Green Lantern it's going to be. And it's, I don't want to spoil if you haven't read it.
Is it on the cover?
Yes, it is actually. And there you go. I mean, so yeah, I suppose if you've seen it on the Rex, then you'll know what I'm talking about. Should I just what the hell spoil?
It's a big blue whale.
Yeah, by the time this airs, it'll be like 3 or 4 weeks after the thing came out. But yeah, it's a whale Green Lantern, and it's great. It's it's the last. You know, I thought that was awesome. It's a really fun story. It's more about it's a character story, and it's a good modern characterization that I think we all look forward to. But what he doesn't forget is he still does it with the trappings of action and excitement that you want from a comic book. So it's not a bunch of talking heads, but there's a lot of interpersonal and psychological things going on. So I think this is really neat. And you wonder, because Buddy's one of those few guys that we know about his family. We know about mm-hmm. Ellen, and we know about the kids. Well, 25 years down the line, let's look and see how the kids and the wife still feels about their husband and father, who's the superhero, and the stage of his aging that he's going through. I think it's a wonderful story, and I highly recommend it.
Cool. And you can follow Jerry Conway on Twitter.
Yes, you can.
It's usually him talking to Len Wein back and forth.
Very true. Very true.
Which is kind of cool.
Absolutely. No, it's, you know, and it, man, he's such a cool guy, and I intend to interview him again as we get towards the end of this story, because, you know, had a great conversation with him. He really went into detail about the death of Gwen Stacy, and I told you, Mike, he talks a lot about Ross Andrew in our conversation, too. So, yeah, I think it's he's a cool guy, and I'm glad he's back.
Awesome. Well, hey, we've been remiss in doing voicemails and emails. I want to catch up on some voicemails. Even though Sal and Tom aren't here, I'm sure that they'll still be okay. And these are some general questions and comments. If you would like to call the show, you can do so by dialing 1-888-977-5903. And I'd just like to say we've been getting a lot of voicemails, and the ones that we're not playing, people don't scream into the phone, because there are a lot of voicemails that we're not able to play because they are just destroyed.
Hey, I'm Jeff.
Yeah. Our friend from Indiana, you know who you are. It's very funny stuff, but it was all crackly and so you can enunciate, but don't yell into the phone. So let me see here. This one is from one of our listeners in Canada.
Hey guys, this is Roger Cousineau from Montreal and Quebec. Yes, I'm French-Canadian, so Tom, fuck you. Listen, no, I love you guys, I love the show, and I have a theme here. Issue 163, that was your New Year's 2008. You guys talked about how the industry needs to change, and this is my situation right now. I buy only trade paperbacks, and I've been frustrated because a lot of series that I really loved, like Fear Agent, American Virgin, Young Liars, I've heard on your show are being canceled. And I'm in a dilemma right now where do I keep buying the trades as they come out if I like a series, or if I want to find out what it's like, or wait until all the trades have been published and then get into the series. You know, I feel a little bit like that show from HBO, Carnival, which I love, but after two seasons was canceled. Or Sci-Fi Channel canceled the 4400s after four seasons, and it was a much better show than The Heroes ever was. But unfortunately, didn't have the viewer to keep it going. So, but if I do that, and if a lot more people do that, don't buy the trade paperbacks, then what you run into, the problem is then, you know, the industry won't make enough money, and then you're not going to have anybody publishing anything. So it's a kind of a catch-22. I'd like your comments on that. Just a little couple of notes. 239 and your just latest show. You guys mentioned R. Crumb doing illustrations on Genesis. Just a note, I awesome. Just purchased from Fantagraphics Books, was published here in 2009, was the Wolverton Bible. The Wolverton Bible. I thought Basil it was great. Wharton. Great illustration. So it's, I don't know if it's on the same lines as what R. Crumb is doing, but just check it out. The other thing I wanted to ask is, you guys were doing the club, and a while back, I'm just catching up on your old shows too, and I was wondering if you would bring it back, but in a format where maybe the listeners of your shows or the people on the forum would suggest things for you to discuss, and then, you know, every month or so, you guys would do that, a new club. So thanks for the great show, and love you guys, and keep it going. Bye-bye.
That's very nice.
All right, thank you very much. I'll address the last one first regarding the book club. We're always open for suggestions. Just go to the Around Comics community at aroundcomics.com, and there's a book club discussion group. So feel free to suggest things. Create your own book clubs and have groups of people with similar taste or people that want to expand their reading of comics. You know, create a group at the Around Comics community, and if we see something that we're really interested in doing as one of our book clubs, we'll throw it in there. Also, Sal and Scotty and Matt Burden and Braxton do the League of Nobodies, which is a book club-themed show, so you can also listen to that and send out suggestions to them. So there's a ton of stuff to read, and you guys do influence our choices there. The other one, kind of talking about, it sounds like he's having, not buyer's remorse, but he's going through something that I went through as a fan for after I started the podcast, and what can I do to help support the industry? And I'll just tell you, you're already doing more than what most people are. You're buying trades. If you want to read trades of series, read trades. Don't feel like you have to put the entire industry on your shoulders and carry it around. Just read what you like, and if that's how you prefer to read comics, then do that. It's where I think it's where the industry is going largely. So read what you want, how you want, when you want. Don't feel like you have to save the industry, because you can hurt yourself financially and
yeah.
and well, seriously, buy
the books.
Yeah.
In general, buy them.
But if you like reading and trade, buy them and trade. Yeah. Don't feel like you have to read the single issues. But if you want to read them in singles, read them in singles. Read what you want, how you want, and when you want. And don't get into a feeling that it's your responsibility to save the industry, because it's not. It's your responsibility to be entertained.
Right.
Any thoughts, boys, as artists?
That's true. Exactly. And
I totally agree.
Lend out the books you like to your friends that you there think you would like them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wouldn't do that. I would echo everything that Chris said, because you're right. Every person that reads a book counts, and it matters. And mm-hmm. But by the same token, you're right. I think don't feel bad if your favorite series does end as a monthly, because that's just the way it is. I mean, the cutoff mm-hmm. is so small, and unfortunately, that's just the way it is. So don't deny yourself the pleasure of reading these books. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's up to you. I mean, if in some books, some indies, you definitely want to read every month, but you mm-hmm. shouldn't feel obligated to either. By the same token,
your only responsibility is to enjoy it and be entertained.
And I think even the examples he gave. You know, there was enough material there for two and three trades of everything that he mm-hmm. meant. In the case of Fear Agent, several trades.
Yeah.
And I think a very healthy run. So, and I know Remender was just on your mm-hmm. show and talking about that.
And they'll bring Fear Agent back at one point. But,
yeah.
You know, and sometimes with some series, you know, 18 issues or 24 issues, sometimes that's what it needs.
Sure. So yeah, read what you want.
All right. We got another one from a longtime listener, and he's actually a fellow podcaster. We have a couple fellow podcasters this week on the voicemails. This one is from Cammy Knoxville.
Hey, Around Comics. This is Cammy, or Cammy Knoxville on the forums. Mainly calling just to get that one guy to stop sending in all those voicemails.
I'm Jesus sorry.
Christ. Give him his own podcast, for crying out loud.
Oh, that must be Templar.
My question is, you guys always are talking with creators, and you are even friends and best buds with some of the creators, so you know what's happening pretty much behind the scenes sometimes in the comic industry. My question is, how are your feelings on people like Rich Johnson, who recently opened a new webpage called BleedingCool.com? It's gossip, but do you guys like the gossip sites? Do you like those kind of site dedicated to what could or could not be true? Because, you know, he has gotten some hit or miss stuff in the past. Just wondering your thoughts. All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Thank you, Cammy. And check out Cammy's Corner. It's a good old video podcast. Rich Johnston. Yay? Nay?
I mean...
Sub or flub?
I
thank you!
It's a guilty pleasure. I mean, I fucking love hearing about people.
Who doesn't like gossip? Come on.
Love it. Love that shit. Who's sleeping with who? Who hates who? Love that shit.
Now, I'm not going to say I'm above it all. And yeah, some of it's funny. But I'll give you an example. I can't be too specific because I can't even remember what it was. But I was somewhere last week and somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, did you hear about this?" And it applied to something that either I was working on or was directly attached to or something like that. And I was like, "What? How'd you hear about that? What are you talking about?" Because it wasn't true. And he's like, "Oh,
it was online.
Don't you read Bleeding Cool?" And I'm like, "No, and you're wrong." So yeah.
I have a specific example.
So I hate that kind of crap.
Yeah. I agree. There was when the New York Comic Con happened this year. It was at the beginning of February. Final Crisis had just ended, and DC had their DC Nation panel, and all the creators were just teasing Grant Morrison about how some fans found Final Crisis to be very confusing. Rich Johnson, on lying in the gutters, went out of his way to say that they were being rude and abusive to Grant, and that it wasn't friendly jocularity, that it was an attack. And it was confirmed by a creator who I will not name, but that creator he was at the convention but was not there. And all you had to do was listen to the audio of the panel, which is very available on iTunes, and you would realize that the guy got it wrong and Rich got it wrong. And I went on a few message boards to say that's not what was happening. It was all fun and games, and it's very obvious that it was fun and games. And they said, well, but Rich Johnson wrote about it, and it was confirmed by this creator, so clearly they can't be wrong. I'm like, they weren't there.
Yeah.
We were there. We saw it happen.
Well, it's what we always say about podcasts and why we both enjoy, and our listeners hopefully enjoy, creator interviews, because you get inflection in voices.
Yeah,
and you get more. If I say, Mike, you are such a dick. And
you're right.
But it's not malicious. But
oh my God, Chris Niesman shit on Mike Norton. He called him a dick.
He said,
yes.
He called Mike Norton a fat bitch.
And I'm really glad that Rucka was very happy to be candid about it, because Rucka was on that panel and was like, yeah. And I didn't appreciate it. And I didn't appreciate that Rich wrote about it, because it was complete bullshit. And I didn't appreciate the fact that them writing about it and talking about it gave the rumor weight. Yeah. So from that standpoint, I can appreciate that. All that said, I do find Rich Johnson an incredibly entertaining writer. Yeah. and when it's not harmful stuff, I think it's a lot of fun.
And I think he's a pretty good guy.
I agree with that. And I've met him, and he's always been very nice.
I don't read that many columns, like none. Zero columns. Occasionally I'll stumble across one that is of interest. I spend most of my time reading actual
comics. I think you'd like Stephen Grant's column.
Lying in the Gutters. Lying in the Gutters is the only column that I read. And
I like Stephen Grant's column as well.
That dude's smart.
Which one is that?
Permanent Damage. It comes out on Wednesdays at CBR, and it's excellent. And I'm saying this as someone who posts my stuff in Newsarama, but it is. It's an excellent column.
Cool.
By the same token, and this is something that Ron Richards from iFanboy and I were talking about earlier this week, we all are hungry for more information, and just in terms of just something to read about with comics. Mm-hmm. And Rich is a very entertaining writer. You know, that there have been times that he's like, okay, people are getting on me about the rumors, let's do some straight journalism. Yeah. And he has, and he's done good stuff. Mm-hmm. And he does cover some very interesting things. And, you know, like he covered when Jason Wood from 11 O'Clock Comics asked the one vice president of Marvel, what's the deal with $3.99?
Yeah.
And, you know, and got a real story out of it. Seinfeld.
Paraphrasing Jason's question in that, and this was an investors meeting, whatever, I forget exactly what it is. Jason, whenever he's not an uber comic book fan, is a hedge fund manager and works, you know, works in
financial. In the financial world.
Yeah. And went to this conference and basically said, paraphrasing, why are you raising the price of comics to $3.99?
Because all the talk was about Marvel's movies, and this is what we're doing, because obviously that's the engine that drives train. So,
and to paraphrase, the answer was, because we can.
Yeah, and so don't buy the hype when it's, oh, you know, paper and production is so much money.
No.
And it's like, no, they are testing the market to see how much readers are willing to pay. And that's business.
Well, and that sounds terrible, but every business does it.
Absolutely.
You know, Coke is, you know, $1.99 a 2 liter because, well, that's what people will pay for.
Right.
You know, it costs them, you know, 15 cents to make that. You know,
you're 100% right, sir.
I think it's hilarious that a 20-ounce Coke costs $1.50 and a 2 liter costs $2. Worldwide, I think that's hilarious.
And from the fountain, if we can get on the soda pop sidetrack, as a former son of a restaurateur, it literally is pennies to create a fountain soda pop drink, and they charge, as you say, dollars as opposed to the pennies.
It's a moneymaker.
It absolutely is.
But that's why Marvel is charging $3.99 for New Avengers, because they know people will buy it, and it's a moneymaker.
Yes.
You know, and hopefully they keep books like Guardians of the Galaxy that don't have the huge numbers. Hopefully they keep it at $2.99.
A This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start your own free 2-week trial by going to netflix.com/aroundcomics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Can I change my voice in the middle?
Sure.
I'm going to. Plans start as low as $4.99 per month, and you could keep each movie as long as you want with no late fees ever. Now watch some movies and TV series all over the internet at no extra charge. Chris uses this on his Xbox and his personal laptop. He says he loves it. They don't really love each other. They kind of had a little falling out. Then Chris brought flowers to Netflix. They accepted it. And they're kind of in a reconciliation thing. So I'm just going to kind of leave them on their own. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today.
I wish Bleeding Cool actually had enough content for a whole website. It's basically Rich's column spread out over a week.
Yeah.
And come up with some more shit, buddy.
Well,
he's just getting started. And, I mean, you know.
make it an alternative news site, because I think competition is good.
There's room. There's room for more.
Yeah, I think competition is good. All right. I'd mentioned another podcaster, and we're just going to blow through some voicemails tonight. So
do it.
Do it.
Hey guys, it's Ian Levenstein.
Hey, how are you?
I won't leave any personal information other than the fact that I'm Ian Levenstein.
How's Comic Time?
Yeah, just wanted to comment from a couple weeks ago when you guys were talking about Bob, you know, Deadpool's little sidekick.
Ah.
And he is indeed a Hydra agent. He's not with AIM or any of those other people. So Bob the Hydra agent did indeed join Hydra for the healthcare, for the dental, for everything you guys were talking about. And, yeah, he even had that blog going for a while, and that was, you know, sort of amusing.
Was that an Epic Comics idea?
I really want Hydra Agent to have his own series. That would be very funny, and I would laugh. Okay. Enjoying the show, because I have nothing better to do at work. Bye.
Real quick, Ian is... I hope he was mentioned in the Comic Book Podcast Companion book. Ian is—he's one of the Comic Book Podcast pioneers. Comic Timing, Comic Timing has been around for a long time. I think it probably was three or four months after we started. So he was right there in that kind of first wave.
Yeah, early
second wave.
All right,
so
fine.
Ian has put out a
lot of
podcasts.
You're like the Gemini 9, all right? If you're one of the Mercury 7, then talk to me. If you're not one of the, if you're a Gemini 9, you can go blow your smoke up your ass.
Good.
All
right, Grandpa.
I'm kidding.
But no, Ian.
Did you hear what Chris Niesman and John Sanchez were saying about the other podcasters? Fucker.
But Ian is a good guy. But yeah, we talked about
Great, honestly.
Yeah, Ian's a good guy.
That's very cool.
And is he a Mets fan? Yankees fan? I'll mess it up. I think he's a Yankees fan.
Red Sox probably.
He's a New York. He'll get really angry. No, I think he actually did some minor league Mets broadcasting. Did some sports broadcasting.
Oh, very cool.
Play-by-play guy.
Another radio guy, and I don't know
him. That's what he went to school for. But I think he's a Yankees fan, and he was doing like New York Mets minor league stuff, and family like almost disowned him or something. So, but Ian's a good guy. But yeah, I think we had gotten into that conversation of what the health plan would be for AIM versus Hydra and that kind of stuff. Which is, I think...
I can't believe... I mean, and don't get me wrong, I like what Dan Way is doing with Deadpool, and I just read the first and only issue
of Deadpool I've ever read, and it was one of these him versus Bullseye thing.
Okay.
It's the most hilarious thing I've ever read.
Yeah. No, Gale had a great run on Deadpool, and of course Joe creating the character and everything.
Which book is this? Maybe I'll buy it.
I'll show it to you right after. It's Dark Reign.
Right.
It's him versus Bullseye,
and Rob really created it.
He's like lobotomized through half of the issue, and then he makes a suit out of meat.
But that's very ambitious for Marvel to have three Deadpool books going on right now.
Well,
Merc with a Mouth, and
think about it.
Well, I know the movie just came out and everything, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how long that lasts.
Yeah, but
they got great people
Deadpool
on it.
In that movie.
Yeah, and that's true, too. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, Mike, I think they have interesting people working on it. Dan's doing a great job on the current book, and I think Mike Benson is a, he's a good crime writer, and I like what he did on Moon Knight.
It was
so
funny.
And Dan Way's Deadpool is fucking hilarious.
Absolutely.
It's got, if it's funny like that, then I'll go back Dan's, and find it.
Yeah, it's really
it's,
good.
It's good.
Are they all funny like
I
that?
I think so, yeah.
I'll go back and read it if it's he's that funny. Because I could care less about the ninjas character jumping out and killing each other, because I absolutely hate that stuff.
No, it's fun. It's it is very good stuff. All right, here's my favorite voicemail from the last couple of weeks.
I didn't want to talk to a voicemail. I wanted to talk to a customer service.
Yes,
which just kind of cracks me up because he got the wrong number.
That was it. All right.
I didn't want to talk to a voicemail. I wanted to
excellent.
Talk
to yeah, my pizza still isn't here. What the hell?
All right. Last good one, and here's an oldie but a goodie.
Hey, fellas, this is Fester from Lansing, Michigan.
Fester.
How's it going? I would like to talk about a few things, namely Green Lantern, Daxamites, and New Krypton.
All right.
I believe it was an issue of New Krypton where they had a little picture of Oa and some Guardians talking, and they said something along the lines of, remember the last time Kryptonians tried to make a push out from their home planet. I think maybe they're referring to the original Daxamites. Maybe the last time Kryptonians tried to take over the world was millions of years ago, billions of years ago, and they were exiled to
it's
Festival. Daxum. That's
okay.
The theory I'm thinking about. There's that. There's also in the pages of Green Lantern Corps where all the Daxamites now have Superman-like powers. I think maybe after they repel the Sinestro Corps, they are going to exile themselves once again to another planet with a red star, and they're going to call themselves like New Daxum or something along them lines. And then Green Lantern. I this is just the new theory I'm running with, but I think the antithesis of the Black Lanterns would have to be the White Lanterns, and I think maybe we're finally going to see like the final death of Sinestro. Maybe he'll sacrifice himself for the life of his daughter. You know, death, life. Maybe Sinestro will be the new White Lantern. That's a theory I'm going with.
Is there such a thing as a White Lantern?
Tom, thank
not
you
yet,
my
but
friend
who
on
knows?
Facebook. You're good people. The rest of you guys, Chris Niesman, I really, you're really sexy. Actually, I'm straight. I just like to fuck with you. Okay, bye.
I thought the whole Daxum thing was kind of almost like an Aryan parable where they left Krypton to kind of create the perfect race because Krypton is multicultural, mm-hmm. and I thought that was kind of the thought was that it was almost like let's create our own little perfect white world of perfect beings.
Yeah, but it still could tie into that. I mean, they are Kryptonians that love Krypton.
Oh yeah, it's like the Vulcans and the Romulans. They're an offshoot.
Yeah, we are now stepping into very 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 geeky territory.
Yes, indeed.
But I think Fester, who we gave Fester kind of a bad name, you know, there for a while. He was calling in and hamming it up. But Fester sounds like a very astute comic book fan. And I love that he's digging all of the new Krypton and the Green Lantern stuff. Wouldn't that be a very interesting conclusion to the new Krypton if the Daxamites become involved with that? Because you've got
I think it's a foregone conclusion, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you've got 100,000 powered Kryptonians that at some point you're going to have to deal with because the power scale is just too much for the DCU. And well, now you have an entire planet.
Yeah, I think it's going to. Yeah, I almost see a Kree-Skrull war coming with the Daxamites and the Kryptonians. Yeah, I think so. And I think, if anything, the Daxamites are going to be the next big bad after Blackest Night.
They could be. Yeah. It's. I think it could be an interesting tie-in to that.
Sure.
The White Lantern thing, that could be interesting. I can
White's
see that.
White's not a color.
That's what I was going to say, exactly. I like the idea that, you know, it will be interesting to see what cancels out the Black Lanterns.
Lack of color.
Excellent. You know, they can send John Davidson after them and Peter Marshall and I'm trying to think of like really white bread
actors.
Actually,
if we're talking along
Hi, how are you?
If we're talking along the spectrum,
Yes.
Then white is actually the combination of all colors.
Yeah, maybe they just need a big...
You blew my mind, man.
Maybe they need a big space prism.
Yeah, I think Chris just wrote the end.
There you go. Sorry, Jeff.
Jeff's like at the at home going...
I didn't think anybody knew that! Son of a bitch.
Oh!
Nishman! Oh, great.
I'm gonna drink a Slurpee.
Nice.
And pour it all over my rug. Do you think he had a tiger rug? This is all from a Jeff Johns tweet.
If he's in L.A., everybody's got carpeting out there. There's no hardwood out in L.A.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? Did he spill one of his 7-Eleven?
He had like the 64-ounce mega strawberry Slurpee and spilled it on his carpet.
That guy is like built
that's
like
what he
a
says.
Whippet.
Who and knows I mean, if that's true?
Why isn't he not as heavy as I am for the amount of times he's going to fucking 7-Eleven?
it's just nothing but Slurpees and you know Slurpees and Captain Crunch.
Because seriously.
You know who I think he's like? He's like the real-life equivalent of Amadeus Cho.
Oh, I was going to say anti-matter lad or whatever. Or matter eater lad,
just has to ingest junk food to power his brain
so he can
keep up with
Could
all
be.
This stuff.
Maybe.
It's just all brain power. It's
jealous.
I don't know, but it's impressive.
Absolutely, he's great. He's great.
I can't wait. I mean, I guess Blackest Night, as we're taping this, it'll have already begun. I think it starts the 7th or the 8th.
How long is this Blackest Night thing running for? How long do I have to get caught up?
I think I think it's only going to be through the summer.
I think it's pretty
fall.
Cool, man.
Oh yeah.
It's probably getting a little too eventish for me.
Yeah, but you know, I was waiting for that to happen. Yeah. I mean, the more people were raving about Sinestro Core War, the more I was like, shh, don't say anything because then they're going to fucking make this the next Civil War, sons of bitches.
I'm smelling something in the air.
And
wait
then,
a minute.
Yeah,
this is all going good.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep it up.
And that's exactly what happens. You know?
But in fairness, Jeff said this was always going to be his Return of the Jedi make the Star Wars analogy and everything.
But here you go. The Secret Invasion was all seeds that Bendis had planted, and I think that was
and boy did those die on the vine, man.
Well, I'm just making an assumption here, and you know what you say about whenever you assume, but I think that was supposed to be an Avengers event. I don't know if that was ever really designed to be a big, across the entire.
That's what Brian says. Yeah.
Yeah,
and it would have been better if it was just within those books.
I agree.
If it was contained within the Avengers books, I think that would have been like Kree Skrull-esque in its scope, which I think would have had legs for years in trade paperback.
I pretty much just read the Avenger and Secret Invasion stuff, like the event and then. The Avenger books, and that's why I guess I really liked it a lot more than some people did.
Well, see, and I'm thinking that with Blackest Night, it's definitely going to be the Green Lantern books and the mini.
They're all mini series, though. I mean, most of them. I mean, I know that, and it's good because I know that like James Robinson is writing the Superman one.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the other Superman creative guys are going to be involved, but I think it will be one shots or whatever. And I think it's alongside the current continuity books. So at least, and that's what they did with Sinestro Core War as well, was there were one-shots that supported the series.
Very good. The Superboy Prime one-shot.
There you go.
One of my favorite books.
I think it was hit and miss. And I would say read the characters that you want to read and read the writers that you want to read. And I think you'll be all right.
You got it.
Yes, I agree.
Real excited. As we record this, it is coming out this coming Wednesday. It will have already come out by the time that you listen to this. But Wednesday Comics, here it comes.
Yay! Can't wait. Before we get to that, can we? Because you held it up that you wanted to talk about a book, and I want you to talk about it. Because it was damn good.
Is it good?
You just mentioned James Robinson.
Yes.
And Justice League, Cry for Justice, #1.
As we're recording it, it just came out this Wednesday.
And it's 1 of 7, which I'm a little bummed because I was hoping it was going to be an ongoing.
I was hoping 1 of 8.
Well, but the good news is, and I kind of feel bad because Dwayne McDuffie was kind of screwed on his run. And I actually, that's me saying that, not although I'm saying it as Dan. They really fucked over Dwayne McDuffie, as I can as an aside, because and I understand that the big three had to be taken off the table, but it really left Dwayne with very few hardcore JLA heroes to lean on, and it really fucked up his run, and all those people that he wanted to use are in James's book, Cry for Justice, and the good news is this is a mini series, but when it's over, then James is going to take over as the regular JLA writer.
Is he really?
Yes, oh, that's already
fantastic.
Been announced.
Fantastic.
So this is your chance to jump on that. And it's a great book. It's a great fucking book.
I really like this and what it did. And I'm in the camp that I feel bad for Dwayne McDuffie because he was, you know, here is DC's mainstream. That is their major flagship title. I don't care what you say.
Justice
that,
League is?
Yes.
I'll say that for a team as a team book, sure.
I think it should, in my mind, whenever I think of Wanna DC, be. I don't think of Superman, I don't think of Batman or Detective Comics. If I were to say, right. if someone said, you know, pick out one DC book that should be their flagship book,
okay.
It's Justice League.
Okay.
That's the Avengers of that universe. It's what yeah. should be the center spine of that universe.
Okay.
Name another one.
I would say the team. No, I would lean on those people that you said you don't think of when you say DC.
Batman,
I'd say
the, think Batman is.
Yeah,
the flagship?
I think individuals first and then mm-hmm. team. The only thing I would say is if you have a continuity problem where you're taking the big toys off the table,
mm-hmm.
why does Justice League have to be always in continuity? That's
yeah.
stupid. That's absolutely stupid. Because then you can just tell great stories. Because it never was when it was originally running anyway.
Yeah, you just said, but what I love, what Robinson has done, and Dwayne McDuffie, I love it. It does kind of dovetail together. You could kind of see McDuffie's frustrations with the book, and it actually got onto the page as Hal Jordan is like, what the fuck is going on? I forget those customers in here.
There's a little children. Oh, yeah, there's a man on his knees that might be mistaken for a child, but no, he's on his knees. It's okay.
He's like, what the fuck is going on? We've been sitting around waiting for things to happen, and we've been getting our butts kicked. We have people that are, you know, friends that are dying. We are... He basically said, we're a boring team.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, you think of the word justice, and it's like the Justice Society, the Justice League. He's like, we're a society. We're a league. Where's the justice?
Yeah, where is the justice? And this book is each story. It's definitely the first issue is a getting the band together first issue. But it's done in a really nice way where each character
the art looks
is,
amazing.
It's gorgeous.
At the end of each character's introduction, they are off to find justice, and they're obviously going to, you know, to come together and form a new Justice League.
I can't wait, Mike, to hear what you think because the two Adams.
I see that,
and
it's a great scene.
And James really gives a justice to both characters.
Well, I asked him about it when he was here because I saw that. Because I had only seen the promo art at the time, and they had Ryan in there, and I was like, "So Ryan's on your team?" He's like, "No." I'm like, "Whoa, what's up? What's going on?"
So it's Ray, but the introduction of those of the two characters, you see the absolute reverence that
each
Ryan
has
Choi
for the other
has for Roy and
for Ray, yeah.
Yeah, or for Ray, and the excitement that Ray has for Ryan for taking over the mantle.
And that's what I loved originally about that book. You know,
well, so. And I know you're just getting into the Starman stuff.
Yeah.
But this I think this book kind of plays to those strengths of Robinson's where he has inner monologues of characters talking about other characters and why they're great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you see that a lot in this Adam scene. And also his choices for this team are really interesting too. Batwoman and Supergirl coming on the team are very interesting, but even more so that the unwritten book out there with, and forgive me, Powers of Shazam, but I think Freddie Freeman is the blank page of characters that have been around since the Golden Age where there's so much story to be told about Freddy, and it's unexplored territory. Yes, and what a great, and again, James I think is a guy that can pull on those Golden Age and Silver Age strings and bring them with a modern sensibility,
and
I'm looking forward to it.
And Gorilla.
Love Congo Bill, love Congorilla.
Which is going to be awesome.
Always a fan of those. Mike, you know Congorilla?
I know, but I don't get it.
He's a gorilla.
Fan. Yeah.
You know, the Brits have this ability, and I'm speaking in general terms, but I'll back it up by pointing to Mark Muller, Grant Morrison, all of these guys that look at American, and Alan Moore certainly, they look at American comics and they find the weirdest characters to focus on. And a great way through the prism of their mind, the interpretations and the stories they're able to come up with.
There's a kind of self-realization to their writing. It reminds me of what I was talking about with MI-13 and Paul Cornell and this stuff. It's just like, Dracula on the moon, that's fucking ridiculous. Let's do it. You know, that kind of thing, you know? And once you do it, you're just like, oh, well, I mean, it is about a time, you know, a bunch of superheroes and stuff. Why not?
Yeah. Well, and also just the logic, too, of, okay, fine, it's a good way to avoid the sun is to be on the dark side of the moon.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. Sure, why not? Let's do that. So,
no,
I don't fault them for it at all. I think it's smart. I've said that about, like, the British TV stuff. It's all smart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As ridiculous as some of it looks, it's very... that's clever.
Well, I just think we take things for granted, and the Brits are able just to look at, you know, something a little bit different, and it's like, no, what about that guy? And it's like, that's a guy that Carmine Infantino shit out on a deadline that, mm-hmm. you know, he wasn't even, yeah, Detective Chimp, okay, whatever. And then, you know, all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, well, why not, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah, here's, you know, and in the case of Detective Chimp, obviously Bill Willingham, an American, is one of the guys that kind of made him cool again. But I think Congarillo, and especially the way he's portrayed in this first issue.
Well, Willingham is a very British name.
But I think James is the right guy for this, and I am looking forward to it.
The art's great.
Yeah, and who is the book?
It's what's painted.
Kiscoli.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's beautifully painted, and it's an event book. Mm-hmm.
I always get a little worried with the painted books because...
Well, it's almost a foregone conclusion that they're going to be late or something like that. Or it won't be as good because it's on a deadline. But this looks fantastic.
Well, they announced it a long time ago, so hopefully there's enough.
I'm interested to know if this is digitally painted or done by hand, actually.
That's a good question.
If they go into that.
I kind of hope they were holding it back to stockpile issues. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or to wait for the art, because it sounds like James had written this.
And I'm very eager for. I'll buy Justice League, you know, if it's going to be James and Mark.
I think Len Wein is going to be writing it in the interim. Cool. And there's nothing wrong with that. And by the way, Len is another guy like Jerry Conway, I think, that has come back and has been telling some very interesting stories. Because did you see his Superman Batman annual with the composite Superman?
Yeah.
Boy, taking a goofy villain like the composite Superman and making him scary, I think is no small feat.
While we're talking about painted art, I wanted to mention real quickly, there's a guy that we've talked about before, Paolo Rivera, who did the Mythos books for Marvel, and then he did a little story in the Spider-Man family.
Are we
going
to talk about how we think he should draw
you,
Chris? Not
did
paint
you
want to
grab
anymore?
It? Yeah, he painted a cover of my Marvel Mystery special, too. Yeah.
No, He did a little story in one of the Spider-Man family books. It was a great little Spider-Man Wolverine story that I loved, and it was the first time
when they were getting drunk in the bar.
And it's the first time I had ever seen Paolo Rivera's just penciled work, penciled and inked work, as opposed to his beautiful painted stuff. And his painted stuff, I mean, I love his painted stuff.
Oh yeah,
I don't ever want to see it ever again.
I like his line work better.
His line work is, if you are
Rubenstein is what it is.
If you are a Marcos Martin fan or Martin, you will just love what Paolo Rivera is doing with his line work, or what would you call this? Just
artist. What would we call this?
Yeah.
What would we call this artist?
It's not
pen and ink. I mean, it's just pen and ink work. It's dope, is what it is.
It's good.
It's badass. But this this Young Allies, which is part of Marvel's 70th anniversary, absolutely fantastic. And it's a team up with Bucky and Toro.
Yeah, the Young Allies. I mean, that's they were the Teen Titans of their day back in the 40s. You know,
awesome stuff.
And these, I love these books. And I Burnham did the Human Torch Submariner one. And I think all of these one-shots have been absolutely a pleasure to read. They've got great writers writing them.
The Jen Van Meter, Miss Marvel.
I didn't know Jen did that.
Yeah.
I have to go grab that.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I had no idea. That's very cool.
Andy McDonald, art.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. The one this week, which was USA, was the title, but it featured the original Destroyer, which was the first character for Timely that Stan Lee created.
That is a badass costume.
Yep.
The Destroyer costume is awesome.
You know, and you know, Kirkman's Destroyer Max series is loosely based on the design of that. I think Ryan Ottley kind of took it its own way, and Kirkman certainly has changed the character.
Corey Walker.
Thank you. That was Corey Walker. Thank you, lad. I appreciate the correction, because I always get artists wrong. But it's no.
We both worked on the Invincible, so it's okay.
There you go, and that's why I was thinking that. But the it's honestly, I really like these 70th anniversary one shots.
I've had a lot of fun with them. They're just good one and done flashback stories. It's old feeling with a modern, you know, a modern take on them, and yeah, they're fun. The Destroyer one was great. It had had a nice conclusion to it.
The Namor one was excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, no, they've all been good. And, you know, I think, because I know for the longest time, Quesada was just so reluctant to go back and do flashback stories of the Golden Age. And certainly he's had a change of heart because, look, you know, Brubaker is coming out with the Marvels project this year. But I think that stuff, even more than the DC and All-American stuff of the 40s, I think Marvel's and Timely's history is a blank page that could be filled in with today's writers and today's artists.
Well, actually, we've been talking about James Robinson. He and Marcus Martin did the Captain America
yes,
one.
Yes, they did. And it was excellent.
It was a good one.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Super fun.
Awesome. Yep. So yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot, you know, the 12, we're seeing it with the 12 with Straczynski as well.
Hopefully we'll see it with the 12.
And, well, yeah, whenever they get back to it. And also the same with, you know, Parker and
if they don't Hardman, finish those that, guys are I will hunt Chris Weston down and make him finish drawing that book.
The only thing I'll say is, in fairness, you know, he and Warren Ellis finally finished Ministry in Space. I'm sure Weston will come back. I'm sure they will.
Finish that. I want to know what happens.
Yeah, it might take a couple years, but I bet you they will. Because it was too good for... And also, yeah, I'd be shocked. I would be disappointed, too. But I really think that's a great story that they were letting Straczynski do without any meddling and everything. So I think eventually it will finish.
Cool. Oh, we got fireworks going off.
Boom.
It's July 30th as we're recording this.
Kablam.
All right, you guys, are we good?
Sure.
Are we finished?
Got anything else, Chris, Mr. Burnham? Anything that's been making you go...
God Help the Girl is really good. It's the new band and album by Stuart Murdoch, the Bell and Sebastian guy.
Excellent. I like Bell and Sebastian.
Yeah, God Help the Girl. Fucking beautiful.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's cool.
These girls have amazing voices.
One other quick comic book thing I want to mention is the Muppet Show book that Boom is doing. You know, who is this that draws it? It's, and I forget his name.
Roger Landridge.
Yes, Roger Landridge. Unbelievable stuff. And I guess Roger was doing a Muppet strip in the Disney Adventures magazine for years, and that's probably why they gave it to him. Why are you doing a Ray Charles thing right now?
I just wanted to.
Okay, I was just wondering. That was awesome. This is times like this, I wish it was a video podcast. But I got to tell you, this is really funny, and the art is great. And if you missed the spirit of the Muppet Show, and it was one of the best shows of the 80s, started in 79, I want to say, but Roger does an amazing job of really kind of doing the humor. This is as good as the Bongo books are for the Simpson world and the Matt Groening stuff. It's that awesome. Good. So, yeah, congratulations to Boom.
Boom's doing some nice stuff. Irredeemable continues to be a very entertaining book.
Not as entertaining as the Twitter war between Mark Waid and Gail Simone.
Waid's going to win that.
I don't think so. I think Gail's the queen of the one-liners. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, Wade's a KG veteran. He's holding back right now.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think if anything, he's too busy working on stuff. Whereas Gail was born for Twitter. Honestly, if anyone can be succinct and hilarious, it's Gail Simone.
140 and Secret Six came out this week
and another excellent issue. Man, that series just continues to be amazingly good.
It's real good. It's a lot of good comics are in it. All right, we're gonna wrap this one up. It's good to be back on a regular schedule. We should have Sal and Tom back here pretty soon. Next time we record will be at Dark Tower Comics for the comic book podcast companion post release party.
Ooh. Are we all gonna be there? Are you guys gonna be
when
there?
Is that? The 17th, Friday the 17th.
My mom will be in town, but maybe I'll bring her.
Okay.
Just cruise on by from. I believe that starts at 6 o'clock, and then we're going to do a couple episodes. Should be fun.
That'd be funny if I brought my mom.
That would be awesome.
The only thing I'm worried about is that's the same weekend as David McKean. So I intend to be there, and I want to be there. I got to find out what's happening Saturday so I can be at the podcast thing on Friday.
Well, if you want to go talk to Dave McKean instead of me, I'll understand.
It's not that I want to. I mean, I do want to, but I also want to obviously support a book that I'm actually
hearing. Hear that, Rich Johnston? John Suntrus said that he doesn't want to talk to Dave McKean.
Exactly. No, and actually it'll be more enforcing my comment about the Mercury 7 and the Gemini 9, because you're all Gemini 9s as far as I'm concerned.
Oh.
Gemini, you're like a Chinese dude in a chair with fireworks strapped to
it. Trying to get over the wall.
Oh, my pants are still on fire from that. That's awesome. I like that.
All right. Thanks again.
You got to draw that for me.
That would be awesome. Thanks again for the voicemails. We will get to emails next time we record. You can email us at info@aroundcomics.com. Please put a listener feedback in the subject line. Windy City Comic Con. You should know about that by then. Saturday, September 19th. Just go to WindyCityComicCon.com.
I'll have the biggest table.
You will have the biggest table.
That's right.
Right in the back.
I'm just going to...
Right in the back. Norton's in the back.
Look at the concessions, Dan.
Last week, you heard that we announced Sean McKeever and Christian Alamey and Tom Nguyen were our latest announcements. Yep.
That's I'm going to pose down with him.
Are you really?
Yeah. I'm like, and he's going to...
Who's got better guns?
I'm going to guarantee you it's Tom.
You're going to have to start working overtime.
Yeah, I'm going to have to start like shooting myself in the ass with something.
Oh, I'd like to thank everyone for leaving us an iTunes music review. We had a big rush of them. Really appreciate it. It's a great way to help spread the word about the show. I want to thank The Cuban 74, BD94, Albert Miranda, Tom... 9, Professor Doom, H.P. Seaton, Jacob Welch, Dan Shadow, Get Sick and Die, Kid Gorilla,
Get Sick and Die,
Warwall, and Hadsky 76.
When I'm president of the internet, nobody's going to be making up bullshit.
So thank you guys so much for leaving iTunes music reviews. Drop by our the community section at aroundcomics.com. I've been very busy lately.
The community section, yes.
Well, I'm going to get back to posting.
You got a rec room at that community? Section.
You can follow every one of us except for Burnham on Twitter.
True.
So just do searches for all of us.
But finding Mike and I is tricky. That's not true. Actually, I think if they search for our names,
it'll come up.
Our crazy names come up.
And Tom and Sal, they're also on Twitter as well as me. You can listen to Tom 3 times a week as he runs you through the history of.
He runs you through. How appropriate! You know, the history of the Flash.
The history of the Flash. And
did you
Tom
do that on purpose?
Yeah,
he did.
I'm clever that way. I'm clever that way.
If you think so,
you can listen to more of me if I haven't bored you to death each week.
With 11 o'clock comics with Vince.
I love 11 o'clock comics.
Yeah, me too. It's my favorite show that I don't shake my fist at.
Oh, you shake your fist plenty at
it. I do every once in a while.
Yeah, I know you do.
But I like it.
I like it too. I'm listening every week, man.
And David and Jason, we have a good time.
You're not some old man fishing on a pier. You're Jason Wu, and I'm drinking Yingling. And,
that's funny.
David, you got anything to add? Oh, it wasn't Marvel. I don't know.
Wow.
I like them all.
The thing about David is that you have to listen to that
show. He kills me.
Because he throws in little zingers and he's so quiet most of the time. He'll throw in these little fucking zingers, and it goes right over our head. And I'll go back and listen through, and it's like, that was fucking funny, David.
I always say he's the voice of reason on that show, but then again, not much of a cockroach race when you look at the field. So, what are you gonna do?
Dang.
But I still like it.
Wow.
A lot.
It's a fun show. Well, thank you. I just show up. I'm Tom on that show. I just show up and
drunk
and have fun.
I'm drinking a little thing I put up. I call it a screw me. It's got a orange juice and Grey Goose, and I've been inserting it annually, so I call it screw me.
Well, that's good. I'm still drinking Yingling, black and tan.
Do wood.
I can't. Your wood's still like too common. I gotta think. And he's great too.
He is?
Yeah, he's a great guy. I didn't know.
He keeps talking about how Scottish he is.
He's half Scottish.
All you have to do is talk like you're Kanye West or something.
Jason Wood's a good man. I like Jason Wood.
He is a good guy. And actually, Jason and David will be at the Windy City.
I know. I'm pissed that Sal's not coming. Vince isn't coming.
Vince is coming to Wizard Chicago.
Oh, good. Excellent. Good. I look forward to seeing those guys.
Blinging sound.
I don't know. Somebody at the door.
Whatever.
What else you got?
I'm going to be at San Diego, so you should come. You should come by my my artist alley table.
My gosh, that is coming up quick.
It's like tomorrow.
You have an artist alley table?
I was going to say it's kind of it's kind like of 2 weeks ago. I did. Now I do.
Holy crap! Go see Chris Burnham in Artist Alley. That's
That's awesome. You tell Chris that that you know him because of Around Comics. Definitely drop by and tell Chris that you heard him on the show and buy a sketch from him and give him money and. Booze and
booze. Bring booze,
hookers and blow, and all that stuff.
Booze. Well, no one's ever bought me a drink because of comics. I'm looking forward to that. Does that happen to you, Norton?
Yeah.
You get drunk because of Green Arrow?
No.
No.
I really like the waiting place. Here, here's some booze.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you for listening. I want to thank everyone on the panel this evening.
Oh, thank you,
Mike Norton, Chris Burnham, John Suntress. Want to thank Patrick for hanging out here with us on a holiday Friday evening at Challengers Comics and Conversation.
Sam and her goofy scarf.
She wears the Doctor Who scarf well.
Remember to check them out at 1845 Northwestern Avenue if you're in Chicago.
Right off the blue line.
One of the best comic book shops in the world.
If you don't shop here, you're stupid.
I would agree.
All right.
Do it.
Everyone, have a wonderful rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in...
Around
Comics.
Comics.
My butt hurts.
Expressed in the interviews or by guests of this show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of the League or Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics. And this has been an Around Comics production. Copyright 2009, Arnie.
Walking in line with this last shadow. A spotlight surprise. A guardian from gallows.